This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jens Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Peter Apple is going to join the program here in advance of the trade deadline here in Major League Baseball at 6 p.m. Eastern. So we'll cover any trades that happen. We have had one this morning, and there could be a lot, as Jensen, I believe you think we're going to have throughout the day today. Of course, the big one has already dropped here with Tarik Skubal moving on to the L.A. Dodgers. By the way, I want to give a correction out there. It was 2 years ago this time that Malik Willis was still a member of the Tennessee Titans. Jensen, that's why I have to put my glasses on and make sure I get those years right. And then flip for a seventh-round pick to Green Bay. And now here we are just a couple of short years later, and he's now got a three-year deal here to quarterback the Miami Dolphins. Great conversation to that end with Marty Herney in the last segment. So please like, subscribe to the VSiN by the Books podcast. You can listen on your time. And Jensen, very quickly, before we talk about the college football betting guide, that's interesting. I'm with Marty on the excitement level for the Dolphins. You know, that's one of my plays over 4.5. He's not as excited as I am about the Falcons, and he's got concerns there with the quarterback room. I didn't really have those concerns. And then you hear that from Marty, and I go, oh, no. He's worried about Tua, and he's worried about Michael Penix, and not just necessarily the injuries, Jensen, but sometimes that can be concerning this time of the year.
Oh, it's 100% concerning, my friend. In deep trouble, the Atlanta Falcons are already, and we have not even played a game yet. So let's see. If anyone needed to be a head coach to figure out a quarterback merry-go-round, that's what you can hang your hat on, Dave. Kevin Stefanski, a veteran of that, his last handful of years in Cleveland. So at least you got a guy who knows week in and week out. He doesn't know who his quarterback's going to be, but he can still put a competent team out there for sure.
Well, maybe you can go get a Will Levis, because Will Levis says he's still better than 32 quarterbacks that are starting in this league today. So we'll find out if the Falcons have to make more quarterback moves out there or not. Hey, it's a big day here at the network. We know that. The College Football Betting Guide is out right now. So again, if you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber, Jensen, you can sign up today. $9.99 is all it's going to take, but there's a much better offer out there, 50% off the annual subscription price if you want to get everything that we do for a full year. That's the better for the full kit and caboodle, but I can understand it. You're a college football fan out there, and you want to get the sharp action and the sharp minds we have here at the network, then get that College Football Betting Guide, and you can start that subscription for as little as $9.99 for your very first month. Jensen, you've looked over it a little bit. I haven't gone into it in full detail, but again, some of the points that I think are pretty omnipresent when you look at it just from a cursory glance is that a lot of our people really do like Notre Dame. I get it. I mentioned here earlier in the program, they're -$8 to make the college football playoff. In context, the next betting choice is Ohio State, and that's almost half. You have to go down to about, -320 for the Buckeyes to make the college football playoff, 350, 320, depending on the market you're looking at. But $8 for Notre Dame, you don't want to say that they're a can't miss, but barring two unlikely losses, Jensen, they do feel like a pretty high probability rate that they're going to make the college football playoff.
They are number one, according to Matt Eumanns, in his top 50 teams here in our college football betting guide, and a very intriguing top 10. Dave, if I can just illustrate that, if you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber yet, please do so as little as $9.99 to get our great college football betting guide out today. Here are the top 10 teams. I'll get your fresh organic take on it. This is according to Matt Eumanns. Number one, the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Number two, Oregon. Number three, Ohio State. Number four, Georgia. Number five, Texas. Number six, Indiana. Number seven, Miami. Number eight, LSU. Number nine, Mississippi. And number 10, Oklahoma. So a fair amount of Big Ten and SEC love all the way through there. But he does have the Fighting Irish as his number one team in our VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Any of those teams you'd have discrepancies on or surprised that made the top 10 in your eyes?
First of all, Matt Eumanns is, look, I trust all of our experts here at the network. Matt does an amazing job, I think, of breaking this stuff down here. Pillar to post, he's a little bit at odds with me right now because I did go to Culver's. I found one locally here about an hour away, and I got a side of broccoli with my bacon double cheeseburger. And Matt is not happy with me for that, but I digress. I'm surprised that he's got LSU and Ole Miss, and I believe, Jensen, you say 8 and 9 in his rankings right there? Because if obviously that's not a talking point, I don't know what is, with Lane Kiffin going from Ole Miss to LSU this year. I think that intrigue right there of LSU being ahead of Pete Golding right now and his now Ole Miss Rebels there, I don't know what to expect from LSU is, I guess, my point here. I look at Ole Miss's roster, and I look at the quarterback and the running back, and it screams, man, hard to screw that up. I mean, I know you can, but they look like they've got really solid players there at quarterback and running back at Ole Miss. Lane, we're bringing in and we're trusting the Lane system to make sure that the athletes that he has there down there at Baton Rouge, that he can get the most out of. So I'm a little intrigued by that juxtaposition of LSU slightly ahead of Ole Miss year one. And I guess, Jensen, some people will say that's why you leave an Ole Miss, with all due respect to the Rebels, that's why you leave an Ole Miss to go to an LSU for exactly that reason, that we're going to get the slightly better athlete to go to LSU than we're going to get to go down there to Ole Miss. Now, whether that's fact or fiction, we'll find out how that plays out on the football field this year. But to me, the more talent is still at Ole Miss, but a quote-unquote the better coach is in Baton Rouge.
It's one of my best bets, and there are a few people who have agreed with me that LSU to make the college football playoff will be one of those things that I think you should have a fair amount of confidence in for some of the reasons you talked about. Lane Kiffin's an offensive machine, and usually in his first year at places, it is an automatic upgrade and then some. He does get Sam Leavitt to transfer in, and he's also got some big-time wideouts. You get Jace Brown, big play threat from Kansas State. You get Jackson Harris from Hawaii, who was one of the standouts there on the West Coast just this year ago. And then he's got a guy in Winnie Watkins who transferred, came over from Ole Miss, who has been an absolute speed demon. So they're going to be able to run it in the air, and they're going to be able to air it out. They're going to do a lot of things up-tempo that you saw where he was able to take advantage with Ole Miss and their athletes last year. I'm not surprised seeing where some of the big dogs are here, but let's go back. Are people overlooking Indiana? And are you okay with where Matt has them at number 6 to start the year? And a lot of this is debatable because it is the beginning of the year, but is Indiana, as the defending champs, ranked high enough for you at number 6, considering it's Texas, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, and Notre Dame in front of them? That, according to Matt Eumanns in the write-up here for our VSiN College Football Betting Guide.
I think we're getting to the stage when we talk a lot of people here at the network, when we're talking college football, you'll get this kind of carte blanche answer in response to that question, Jensen, which is, I'm out of the Kirk Cignetti doubting business. I'm out of it, right? You can't do it. You can't doubt that guy anymore with what he did and what he has done at Indiana in a couple short years and winning a national championship, Indiana football. I don't know that I saw that coming in my lifetime, and now we've seen it. I don't know that I'm ready to discount them just to say, well, it's really hard, obviously, to go back-to-back. We know that. And we know how good the Big Ten is as a whole. Because I think even the underbelly of it, if we're calling like a Penn State or a Michigan this year is an underbelly, man, this conference is loaded, Jensen. It's loaded for bear. Cignetti is the type of guy, though, that he doesn't mind. Put the bullseye right on me. He does not care. As a matter of fact, I think he welcomes it. I think he wants that. He wants to be regarded as the team to beat, right? So, like, he loves this stuff. I'm sure he's going to tell his kids the same thing. Hey, they're all talking about all these other guys now. They're all talking about Ohio State again. Oregon's picked higher than us in some places, right? Penn State, Michigan's, those guys are going to be back with new coaches. We'll find out what that looks like. And they're forgetting about us already. I can absolutely see Cignetti saying this stuff to his kids and saying, if you want to make last year really means something, then let's go out and win the conference again. Let's go out there and get to the college football playoff again, and let's not shy away from trying to do something here historic in Bloomington, which is not just winning a national championship, but going back-to-back. I don't think they will, but I am out of the doubting of Kurt Cignetti because the proof's in the pudding at this juncture, Jensen, and I think that's exactly what he wants, and use that as a chip on the shoulder to his kids that are not named Fernando Mendoza. And he's going to tell those guys, you got to go earn it. You can. You're good enough. That's why we're here, because Indiana football is here to stay, And I think this is a big part of that and why he's not leaving Indiana anytime soon, to build that power like in Ohio State, like in Alabama in years past, to say we are now one of those blue bloods in college football.
All right, one of your favorite people, one of our favorites here on the network, Tim Murray, does a fabulous job on VSiN Primetime with Matt Eumanns. We're going to get a full dual threat here from the Primetime boys in what we'll talk about today, and we will discuss and break down in earnest much more of the intricacies of this betting guide. Dave, Tim Murray has a 100-to-1 Heisman Trophy best bet on Lincoln Kienholz of the Louisville Cardinals, and I got to tell you, his write-up on it is fantastic. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. Long shot Heisman winner has hit the last 2 years, so why not a third? Fernando Mendoza, 55-to-1 last year. Travis Hunter, 50-to-1 2 years ago. Back in 2016, Lamar Jackson of Louisville entered the season 100-to-1 to win the Heisman. Remember Lincoln Kienholz coming over from Ohio State? Veteran, understands how to move the football. Will he have the weapons to do it? But that one definitely jumped out to me, of Tim Murray going with a triple-digit Heisman candidate. Your thoughts on one of our favorites here, Timmy Murray, Lincoln Kienholz, for the Heisman Trophy at 100-to-1?
Tim's got a keen eye going down that board, finding a great offense, we would think, with Louisville this year. I love where his head's at there, because the offense should be there for sure. Now, again, we talk about team success with individual awards, and that's why Fernando Mendoza last year, with the great year Indiana had, was able to cash that at 55-to-1, just kept building and building as the year went on. I think Louisville, the issue there will be, can they win enough with a great offense and with a potentially great signal caller in order to really be in that conversation at the end of the year? But if so, and Louisville wins, say, 9 games, I think Tim's live at 100-to-1. Let's talk about the football giants in the NFL next. John Harbaugh, you're on the... So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
The wait is over. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is here right now, Jensen. We've been talking about it a lot this morning, and for very good reason. You can get access to it right now if you're a VSiN Pro subscriber. You don't have to worry about a thing, because you're going to get instant access to all of our college football guides, including the NFL guide, too. But this one for college features previews of all 138 teams, top 50 preseason choices, power ratings, proven betting system, best bets from all of our experts here at the network. Plus, going to get that NFL betting guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. So you can start today if you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber for as little as $9.99. Or the better deal is you're going to get a full year and save 50% off with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. So head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. I would be listening, watching throughout the day here to all the shows coming up after us today. We're going to be talking a lot about that football betting guide in college. And again, the NFL already out, as you know, people, if you're a VSiN Pro subscriber. To that end, Jensen, let's keep going. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty of breaking down every single NFL team here before we get to the preseason, which begins in earnest on Thursday. Looking at you, New York Football Giants, after we begin today's edition of the Daily Gridiron. And Jensen, when I look at this football team this year, they are sitting at a win total of 9.5 to make the postseason. It is +265 to win the East. What? Year one for John Harbaugh? Really? 6-to-1 win the NFC and go to the Super Bowl. Come on. 30-to-1. Are they really going to do this again? No, Eli Manning, he's not walking through that door. 65-to-1 if you like the G-Man to get this done and win the whole thing in year number one for John Harbaugh. But I guess that's where we should start, Jensen, with the head coach change, because when you get a guy like the last name of Harbaugh to lead your team, the expectations should and do go up instantly.
Yeah, they do. And again, not just that, but the coaching staff in general. Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator. Denard Wilson, your DC. Chris Horton also comes over as assistant coach of special teams. And no shock here, a lot of Ravens holdovers that follow John Harbaugh into the Meadowlands here. Okay, major additions for this roster. Isaiah Likely, speaking of Ravens, coming over a three-year deal from Baltimore. That is going to help Jackson Dart as a safety valve and also a big play threat in the red zone. Tremaine Edmonds, also the linebacker there. Greg Newsom, we've seen him plenty here in Cleveland. The cornerback was with Jacksonville. And then some interior defensive linemen and DJ Reader and Shelby Harris. Darnell Mooney, Calvin Austin III with Wandale Robinson departing. You get some veteran wide receivers to bolster there. One of the great future bets I hit this year in the draft at 50-1, Arvell Reese, number 5 overall. To the New York Giants there as a first rounder that'll make a huge, huge impact. And Francis Maoga, the offensive tackle there from Miami.
Yep.
You get those two impactful top 10 picks that will be starters from day one. You also, I think, look at this division. It's day one. You obviously keep a keen eye on every single day. When you get to year two of a young quarterback like Jackson Dart, the success from last year, and now you're that guy that's not going to surprise anybody. Hopefully Malik Nabers is healthy and ready to go because he's a difference maker, not only in this offense, but also around the league. Brian Burns, Abdul Carter. Again, you get out Arvell Reese in there now. Like, you see the young key foundational pieces, not only for this year, but for years to come. Does that change now where you get just that automatic upgrade with the coaching staff and the pedigree of what John Harbaugh brings? Because of what he did with the young Lamar Jackson, he's got a mobile quarterback dual threat with Jackson Dart. I think you can be bullish, but again, it's still the NFC East where you've got a lot of improvements from all three of the other clubs as well.
Here's the thing. Like, I've been looking at the Giants as a guy that watches this division like a hawk every year, as you know, Jensen, and they've been the sleeping giant, pun intended here, and they might be waking up. This roster is a lot better. There's no other way around it. The roster is a lot better. So I get it that their win total here is sitting at 7.5. Their schedule is brutal. Schedule's brutal. Roster is better. Like, I'll just give you an example. When you've got a guy like, say, Devin Singletary, Tyrone Tracy Jr., as backups to Scadabo there in the backfield, that's a solid depth chart right there at running back. And you do get injuries to that position, it seems like a lot. So they've got bodies, NFL ball carriers that are ready to go. And John Harbaugh's going to want to run the football. Make no mistake about it. Jackson Dart's going to run the football a lot. Even Jameis Winston as a backup quarterback, I think people look at that and say, you know, it's fun, the Jameis experience, but it is depth. And it is a guy that knows the league. And you certainly know that if Jameis is in there, probably a 50-50 shot of getting a touchdown and or a pick. But the point is, they've got veterans in backup roles. They don't have a lot of young guys in backup roles. Even a guy like Thibodeau. When you look at Kayvon right now, this is a former top 5 pick in the league. And now right in it positionally, he's gonna play opposite of Abdul Carter. But they've got depth now at positions. And maybe guys like Thibodeau and like Carter underwhelming so far overall in their young careers. Thibodeau a little bit longer in the tooth than a guy like Abdul Carter. But these are pedigreed picks, Jensen, that they still have on the roster. So I'm looking at this thing. You mentioned Malik Nabers. He's got to be really good. Darius Slayton's a solid pro that they have on the opposite side here. So they've got a real ability to make a big jump in year one under John Harbaugh. The reason why I haven't played anything on them yet is because the aforementioned schedule is really tough. Now, I normally don't like to play that. I'm not one of those guys that plays the schedule game a lot because I think last year is really hard to base. This is the ultimate year-in, year-out league. It really is. That's why we get worst to first just about every year in this league in a division. It happens. And I think it's going to happen again this year. Could they be one of those teams? Potentially. Because, again, it's a solid roster. It's a solid coaching staff, as you mentioned. But they've got to me, it's still a bit of a college offense, okay? Jackson Dart, from all reports, Jensen, can stand back in that pocket and beat you. But what did we just get out of Baltimore? And what was the, if there's a criticism for a guy like Lamar Jackson, and there really shouldn't be, the questions early were, is he going to be able to play an NFL style? Lamar Jackson has proven that he can beat you with his arm as much as he can his leg, but his legs are what makes him special. I don't know that I'm ready to do that with a guy like Jackson Dart just yet. But to make him special and make him elite, you're going to have to be able to threaten in the pass game just as much as you do in the run game. So that would be my one concern for a second-year guy. It's got to look a little bit more proficient on your traditional 5-7-step drops and get the ball out where it's supposed to be. And I know if you can do that, then all of a sudden that running threat, kind of like Lamar, much more poor man's version of it, then it becomes that much more dynamic because I got to protect against two things instead of one.
Okay, let me redirect here. Can this defense, with the improvements, especially through the draft and free agency, can this defense, if they're at league average, because a lot of their ranks, I mean, they were 28th in total yards per game last year, 359.5. They were 27th in total yards or in yards per play at 5.8. Rush yards per game, they were second to last, 145.3. Yards per rush attempt, dead last at 5.3. You would believe, knowing the Baltimore teams of old, that is right where John Harbaugh is going to say, we have to stop the run and get our boys off the field and allow this high-octane offense, when healthy, to get after it. Did they do enough so far this offseason, in your eyes, to allow this defense a much sharper, opportunity to be way better than some of these statistical categories that they were just awful in last year?
Well, look, you're running that base 3-4, and look at the 4 that you're running. We'll find out what Arvell Reese is, but what's not to be excited about what you saw at The Ohio State University? Brian Burns, you bring him in as a big acquisition a year ago, and I think we all know what he did in Carolina. Can he replicate that now in his Giants career? Tremaine Edmonds, back in his day, that's a machine tackler, right? It's just a volume guy. It's going to get in there, stick his nose in the run. Abdul Carter's got to be the guy that you say he's going to have to be better in year number 2. He's going to have to take a big jump up if this defense is going to excel. But I'll tell you, man, even some of the backups, I mentioned Thibodeau and Micah McFadden, looking at those guys as backups here, potentially, in this 3-4, that's a pretty good rotational linebacking core that you're going to have. So I would be really bullish about the 4 part. Now, we'll find out about the 3. Obviously, DJ Reader is a big acquisition that they get to man that nose tackle position. Shelby Harris on one side and Darius Alexander on the other. Maybe question marks there. But really, it's those other guys that I mentioned, the Burns, Reese, Edmonds, Carters, Thibodeaux. Those are the guys that are going to have to lead this defense up front before you start to attack that secondary a little bit. But Jensen, it's going to start with those linebackers. If they're dynamic in this 3-4, then this defense has got a really good chance to be really good.
All right, where are you popping them in Survivor? Probably not the first couple of weeks. Is it right early? Yeah. If you get, obviously, the huge divisional game Sunday night, your Monday night at the Rams, Titans or Cardinals, will you pop them there? Or you have to wait and see a little bit.
I would probably want to look to week 4 against the Cardinals to see what Harbs has got working in the first 3. Those first 2 games, I think Cowboys coming in there on Sunday night is going to be really tough. Then you're going to L.A. to take on the Rams. Like, this is one of those teams, Jensen, they could be 0-2. And then I'd wait on the win total and see if that thing drops down to 5.5, 6s somewhere in there, and then maybe pop in over. That team's going to get better as the year goes on. They might struggle a little bit early. Let's get to our best bets before we have Peter Apple on the program. What are we going to get in the Major League Baseball trade deadline? That's all straight ahead. VSiN by the books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the books right here on VSiN.
The Circa Survivor documentary is heating up. This week's episode is called The Turning Point, and for very good reason, week 5, for the first time in Circa Survivor history, the number one pick of the week goes down in flames on a Thursday night. The chaos that follows is unlike anything that contest has seen. By the time weeks 6 through 9 play out, the contenders separate from the pretenders, and the pressure gets very, very real. So $18.7 million on the line. Watch the next episode Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN. And again, if you have to catch up, you can catch episodes 1 and 2 on YouTube right now. All you have to do is search VSiN Live. If you like the drama, it is great drama out there for the Survivor series. And think that that's where this has gone, that we're on TV now with Circa Survivor, not just the contest, Jensen. It's showing why it is arguably, and for my money, the greatest football contest in the world. Going to get to our best bets here in just a little bit. Peter Apple is going to join the program in the next segment as well. Jensen, we'll get his thoughts on what he thinks we might see here with the Major League trade deadline coming up at 6 p.m. Eastern. But we also have a way for you people to contact us out there in the real world at buythebooks@VSiN.com. Really appreciate everybody that inquires and reaches out here. And this one was a very interesting one from Stephen Lynn. And I got to meet Stephen Lynn because they came all the way from Baltimore and they made the pilgrimage here on Friday after the show, Jensen. And we're kind enough to wait, and we got to chat right after the program yesterday. And so he emailed and said, thanks for meeting and taking the time to chat with us on Friday morning. It made our trip. We had lots of fun visiting Franklin and the Mint Gaming Hall. We tell everybody, come on, check it out for yourself. I forgot to mention that I really enjoy some of your comments, i.e. the Mets might need to get Kelly Leak in the outfield. It's been a disaster. And yes, he likes my 38 special references. Hold on loosely, but don't let go. Lynn and I would also vote for the Lewis Ross administration here, too, in Maryland. They also are from Minnesota, Jensen. So really cool to see people coming from all walks of this great country of ours to come right here to the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. That's why we're here. We appreciate Stephen Lynn coming here and then also hitting us up on the viewer mail. Jensen, did you, I know you were kind of in a secluded place this weekend. Did anybody come up to you and go, hey, that's Jensen Lewis from VSiN by the Books?
We had a lot of people that recognized the game, both on and off the course. That was great. Speaking of we have a trade breaking right now in Major League Baseball. Jeff Passan reporting the Toronto Blue Jays are acquiring right-hander Jose Soriano in a trade with the Los Angeles Angels. I like the move for a couple of different reasons here. Again, you're getting a cost-controlled starter, and knowing what we could be headed into a, not only a lockout next year, but in a potential salary cap. Think about from a payroll standpoint, you have Dylan Cease as your ace for the foreseeable future. You just got Jameson Taillon in that waiver wire trade with the Chicago Cubs. You have Trey Savage, of course, who you would think would be the 1-2 punch along with Cease top of the rotation. And now you get Jose Soriano, who is going to be under club control. And I'll bring up where his contract is here in just a moment. But Dave, I got to tell you, very shrewd here looking at what not only Mark Shapiro, president of baseball operations, Ross Atkins, the general manager, that is a contract now that they're going to be able to have cost controlled. He's going to go into his second year of arbitration after this year. Right now he's making $2.9 million this year. Let's just call it a double up. So he's be at $5.8 million maybe next year. And so they control him for the rest of this year, 2027 and 2028. Very shrewd move here by the Blue Jays as well.
Okay. If I may approach the bench, Your Honor, I have some questions that I'd like to take out of counsel here. I don't know that I wanted the general public to hear this, but why? If you're the Blue Jays and you deal Gausman, the points you just laid out for control for next year are great, but does this signify to me for 8-1 to make the postseason this year, 4.5 games back of a wild card? That's where Toronto is. Like, if you're making this move, and I'm kind of confused from the Angels side why they're moving a guy that they had control over next year for those same reasons that Toronto gets him. Are they trying to make a run this year, Jensen, by making this kind of, I don't want to say lateral move, moving on from Gausman to the Cubs, getting Taillon, as you mentioned, and Soriano? Are they trying to do something here in the second half?
Very interesting. First of all, here is the package. According to Jeff Passan, Angels received top shortstop prospect Arjun Nimala, outfielder Eddie Micheletti, and right-hander Angel Rivero from the Blue Jays for Soriano. So again, you're looking at where the Angels trying to bolster top end of their farm system. Now, again, put a pin in this one. Top shortstop prospect, Nimala.
Yes.
Not that Zach Neto's on the move, but it, at least it is a point of reinforcement. It could be. You're going to need a significant package for Neto. But on the Blue Jays side, remember, Gausman was an expiring contract, so they were going to lose him anyway. So you had to get something at least back in that one. But it is, and from the top of the show, for people just joining us, I had said, you can look at the American League race right now and where the Blue Jays are. They'd have to leapfrog a boatload of teams, but the Tigers and the Orioles, 2.5 back, Mariners, 2 back, Rangers, 1.5 back, Twins, 1 game back. Not that the Blue Jays are waving the white flag, but they had to do a little buying and selling, just knowing where they were. They think they can compete as early as next year, if not still be in the wild card race this year, Dave. So I like the move. And John Mozeliak, was saying, you know, in the last couple of weeks, going to do a deep dive on the organization, try and go get the best players available. So I told you I could anticipate Detmers or Soriano, one of them getting moved. We have at least an initial answer, Jose Soriano to the Toronto Blue Jays for three prospects in return.
That is really significant because, again, I think if we thought we had talked about the asking price, it felt a little bit steep, but you get a top prized shortstop prospect from Toronto going back there. I do connect those dots with Zach Neto, and you would have to believe that Neto's on the move later on today with that type of deal being announced here. And I think for other teams out there that are in contention, they're going, we didn't get Soriano. He's going to Toronto? Man, it almost makes me want to take a nibble at 8-1 for the Blue Jays, that they feel like they've got top-end pitching still now, even with Gausman in Chicago, to make some sort of second-half run here and not giving up any, you know, positional players today. At least we'll see if they have any more deals that they might make in context with this move. But that's very interesting to me if you can, quote-unquote, get the best out of Soriano down the stretch here. I'm not saying fix him because I don't know how much needed to be fixed from what he was doing in Anaheim. But that is very interesting move here on the surface. We're going to talk with Peter Apple again coming up in the next segment. But this is a significant move that's just been made. Jensen, anything else that you take out, whether it's, you know, I was looking at the Brewers to get the number one seed. It's a little bit longer, just over 5-1. They're a half game up on the Dodgers right now versus the Brewers at +475 to win the pennant. Like, I think I'd rather take the number one seed at over 5-1 versus the shorter number, not just because it's a longer number, but I don't know that the Dodgers, sure, if they get the number one seed, that's great, but I think they're okay being one or two, whereas it feels more imperative for the Brewers to try to get that top seed again this year. Is that a bet that once this dust settles, you'd be willing to make something in that context?
Interesting. Fangraphs has the Brewers' final record. Again, both the Dodgers, the Brewers, 69 wins. The Brewers, 42 losses. Dodgers at 43. Fangraphs has the Brewers projected at 96-66. Dodgers at 99-63. So a three-game gap, at least. Again, that's just via Fangraphs. So things can change. Dodgers are going to do everything they can to really allow their starting pitching guys who are injured. Blake Snell, maybe one more rehab start. If he's not back this week, he'll be back the next week. Tyler Glasnow is beginning a rehab assignment this week, I believe. And then obviously knowing you have Tarek Skubal there, they should be getting reinforcements quite quickly. We'll keep an eye on Shohei Ohtani, the knee inflammation. Dave Roberts did say that he should be getting to some bullpens here sooner than later. Now, whatever that timeline looks like, we'll wait and see. But again, I think you're going to see more of the starting pitching moves happen now. We're starting to get those dominoes falling. Clay Holmes is going to go at one point today. Luke Weaver's going to go on the relieving side. You know, do any other frontline pitchers. And then also watching the position guys, too. Speaking of the Angels, you know, Mike Trout would fit in the Philadelphia Phillies outfield really well right now. We mentioned about them needing a bat. That would be priority 1A for me. If John Mozeliak in the Angels front office is now starting to jettison some of the bigger pieces, that would be a blockbuster just because of where the name recognition and the namesake is. So anxious to see kind of what this transpires here in the next couple of hours.
Whew, that's a big one with the Soriano news going to Toronto here. Again, would never have guessed that to be the destination. You would have thought a team that was certainly in contention and being 8 games under 500 like the Blue Jays are, an interesting move. But to get that top shortstop prospect out of Toronto, I do wonder what that means for Zach Neto coming up here as this day goes on. Once again, that's a 6 p.m. Eastern Major League Baseball trade deadline. It's exciting. I think certainly if you're a team that's in it, to know that there are some supplemental moves past Tarek Skubal that can be made to try to bolster those rosters here again. And we don't know what the landscape in Major League Baseball is going to look like next year. So you better go try to win this year at all costs. We know that's what the Dodgers are doing. Peter Apple is going to join the program next. We'll get his thoughts on what he thinks he's going to see, what could be a very chaotic day around the league. That's all next right here on By the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis. And the trade deadline is tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern. We know that Jose Soriano has already been dealt this morning here from the Angels to the Blue Jays. Some moves starting to pick up, Jensen, and we figured business might be booming today. That's for sure. Peter Apple, kind enough to join us here, co-founder of Just Baseball Media. Give him a follow on X at Peter Apple 23, and joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line, coming to us from the great city of Chicago. Peter, so many places. We got to bounce around and get your thoughts on this very, very busy trade deadline day, what you expect and what you've already seen. And we'll start right there with the North Side and the South Siders there in Chicago. Both teams felt like they've got better here with pitching. Castillo coming over, obviously. Brazelbon coming in from the bullpen for the Southsiders, and the Northsiders getting Kevin Gausman. Are they done? Do you think that is enough for both the Cubs and the White Sox so far in the trade deadline?
So I've liked what both teams have done so far, but I don't think they should be done. Let's start with the Chicago Cubs acquiring Kevin Gausman, and the package sent over to Toronto was actually lighter than I thought. You got two offensive pieces, but neither has that much pop, right? When you look at the, you know, under the hood and you look at some of the numbers, it's only a few home runs. The slugging percentage isn't very high. Hard hit rate is pretty low, which almost tells me that the Blue Jays were targeting those types of bats. So I'm curious what their plan is there. But for the Chicago Cubs, they needed a lockdown guy who can throw a game in the postseason. And Kevin Gausman has thrown in a lot of postseason games. He's not having the best season of his career, but you could say that about the entire Toronto Blue Jays team. Maybe a change of scenery will be nice for Kevin Gausman. And at the end of the day, the Cubs needed a pitcher who can throw in a playoff game, and they got it in Kevin Gausman, and it didn't cost much. On the White Sox side, I got to be honest, I didn't love the Luis Castillo trade unless they make another move in the starting rotation. If you're just bringing in Castillo to be an innings eater five, that's fine. But if he's the only move in the starting rotation, I'm not going to like it. However, I do like the acquisition of Wascar Brazelbon, the reliever for the New York Mets, who has put up a fantastic season. Now, they did give up a decent starting pitching prospect in Gabe Davis, a 6'9" right-hander, but he's not off to that great of a season. And on top of it, he is a prospect at the end of the day. So that might feel a little bit steep if you're a White Sox fan, but Brazelbon is a big upgrade in that bullpen. So I don't think either teams are done. And especially on the White Sox side, if they don't add another starting pitcher, I'm not going to like that Luis Castillo move.
I totally agree. Starting pitching being the operative move, because over the weekend, Peter, we saw the biggest domino fall. And I think it caught a lot of us that have been in the industry, maybe by surprise. Usually you don't see blockbusters of the Tarek Skubal capacity happen until maybe the final hours into this afternoon, if not later on tonight. But the Dodgers get their man, the guy that they, I think everyone kind of thought would end up going to LA. Speaking of packages being a bit light, I think that's maybe the consensus here with knowing what some of the other potential deals could be. Maybe your thoughts on not only what Skubal means at this point, but does that now put them so far ahead of a Brewers, a Phillies, a Braves? Where is the chasm now for you with that rotation potentially in LA?
Well, the interesting part about this deal is, you know, people think that the Dodgers are just adding to their glut. But at the end of the day, Blake Snell is still on the IL. Tyler Glasnow is still on the IL. Shohei Ohtani is dealing with a bicep and a knee injury. This Dodgers team has been rolling out pitchers like Eric Lauer. They needed a starter. And I guess I disagree with the consensus that this return was light. We have to remember, at the end of the day, all you're getting is about 10 starts from Tarek Skubal, and you're hoping for a couple of playoff starts. Now, it increases the value for the Dodgers, considering they are the most likely team to go farther in the playoffs, therefore getting more starts out of Tarek Skubal. But Zaire Hope is a monster, the big-time headliner in that deal going back to Detroit. He's up to 23 home runs, 18 stolen bases, 10 home runs in his last 22 games. He's a 21-year-old tearing up AA. I think this is an excellent prospect to add. And then River Ryan, I think the uproar is about him, just because people look at his age and say, well, how is he that good of a prospect? It's really important to remember that River Ryan did debut with the LA Dodgers in 2024 and pitched about 40 innings to a 1.33 ERA. He looked awesome, but then he got Tommy John surgery. like a lot of pitchers do. And this year he's been dealing with a hamstring injury. So injuries are the only thing that have really kept him down in the minor leagues, but he is one of the better pitching prospects overall in baseball. Now, it's not normal that you'll see a 27-year-old prospect ranked highly in prospect rankings, but River Ryan is just truly an outlier because of these injuries. And then on top of it, they got Brady Smith, who has a 35% strikeout rate as a 21-year-old pitching prospect. This is a bigger deal than the Blue Jays just gave up in order to get Jose Soriano, who was challenging Tarek Skubal at the beginning of the season for the American League Cy Young and comes with extra years of control. So I just disagree with consensus saying that this package is too light. But on the Dodgers side, they can stomach it, right? They got River Ryan in a trade. They got Zaire Hope in a trade. So they're just flipping their incredible assets. And it's a testament to the Dodgers player development that they could just continue to create guys like these.
That is a fascinating take, Peter, and one we do not hear, because you're right. That's not the consensus out there. I like your perspective there. Co-founder of Just Baseball Media joining the program now. And Peter, we just saw this from Jeff Passan out there as we keep getting these trades coming in. Luis Arraez is going from San Francisco to Philadelphia to play second base there. When I look at the Phillies in the betting market right now, they're the fifth betting choice to win the pennant at 10-1, behind obviously the aforementioned Dodgers, Brewers, Braves, and now even the Cubs with that acquisition of Gausman. What else do the Phillies have to do today, Peter, in order for us to really take them seriously? Because Bryce Harper himself came out and said, we're not good enough, in paraphrasing in so many words, we're not good enough the way we are. We got to get better. Maybe they got a little bit better today with the Arraez acquisition.
So I was actually going to come on here and predict the Phillies go grab Taylor Ward from the Baltimore Orioles. They really need a right-handed bat, but instead they get the left-handed bat who plays second base where Bryson Stott calls home, which is interesting. And it's not as if Bryson Stott is having a good season. I'm just curious where the Phillies plan on playing Luis Arraez. I would have to think about that one. But at the end of the day, the Phillies just need bats. And I'm sure that the price was worth it in order to get Luis Arraez, who has really improved defensively. And we all know what Luis Arraez can do with the bat. Hit close to 320. You know, the contact skills are at the top of the line. So any bat is a good bat. I'm sure Phillies fans are excited. My only question is, where is he going to play? Now, what do the Phillies still need to do? I think they really need to add a high leverage bullpen arm. Brad Keller, they lost him for the season. Now they still have Duran and they still have Kirkering and they still have a couple other nice bullpen arms. But I really think that the Phillies need to add another high leverage reliever. Maybe that's Adrian Morahone with the San Diego Padres. Maybe it's an in-division trade as Luke Weaver still has not been dealt yet. But the Phillies definitely need to do more if they want to compete against the likes of the Dodgers or the Brewers or the Braves.
Yeah, and think about Bryce Harper. You know, Luis Arraez has also had some first base under his belt. So if they decide to send Harper to the outfield, that could also be just a puzzle piece. But I'm with you, Peter. Interested to see how Dave Dombrowski, Preston Mattingly make all that work. Okay, speaking of position players, I think we are going to see some names go today. You thought of a guy in Taylor Ward that I've been kind of waiting for. Not a lot of right-handed power available. Is there a position player name or two that you've got a little bit more smoke around that you think gets dealt here today?
Yeah, two big names that I've heard a lot about. And number one is Zach Neto with the LA Angels, right-handed hitting shortstop, you know, can be a potential 30-30 guy at that position. He does have problems, though. He strikes out a lot, near 31% this year. But my guess is that Zach Neto in his current situation with an Angels team that's not really competing, it looks to me like he's selling out for power. I think he's too talented to rock a strikeout rate that high. And I know the Red Sox are definitely interested adding him to their shortstop, but the Angels want Franklin Arias, a top three prospect in all of baseball. So my brain immediately goes, well, why don't they add a Reed Detmers, right? They already trade a Jose Soriano. If they want Arias, maybe you package Neto and Detmers, and then the Red Sox would clearly give a little bit more, but we could potentially see a mega trade over there. And number two, which is fascinating, I've heard a lot of steam of Adley Rutschman. The Baltimore Orioles are listening on Adley Rutschman, which shocks me. But then I think about it. Well, they have Samuel Basayo, who they already extended to be kind of the next catcher. And Adley comes with one and a half years of control. The Orioles have not exactly had a great season. I could understand that they'd be listening. However, what really surprises me is that they are listening within the division. The Yankees, the Red Sox, the Rays, all three of those teams have contacted the Orioles, and the Orioles have not hung up the phone. And I was actually talking to some people yesterday, and I thought, what is the last biggest in-division trade in the American League East in particular? And I thought, I don't remember a bigger one since Roger Clemens was traded from the Blue Jays to the Yankees back in 1999. Yeah. Would that be the biggest in-division trade in the American League East since then? Off the top of my head, I think that's the biggest one I could come up with. But those two names, they might be on the move.
Peter, great stuff. Everybody give him a follow on X at Peter Apple 23, co-founder of Just Baseball Media. If you want more VEASAN, of course you do. A numbers game's coming up next. Dustin Swielsen, Kelly Bidlin, they're up right here. It's VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network.